This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Say it and do a little shimmy as you say it.
Chateaubriand. Shoulder.
Chateaubriand.
Just a little shoulder.
Little shoulder. Little ankle.
Little ring.
Oh gosh. Welcome back to She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time. This season, we're discussing critics, theorists, educators, and all things academia. Today, we're going to finish our story about Lena Bobardi, modern architecture's starchitect and one of the first practicing women architects to publish architecture theory. I'm Nurjiri Rivas, upset at my dog because she chewed through our trim in Houston, Texas.
Oh, poor Athena. Poor Nurjiri, sorry. I'm Jessica Rogers, trying to figure out how to have a productive conversation with ill-informed, unvaccinated people based out of Washington, D.C.
I'm Lizzie Rahr, wishing I had air conditioning in San Francisco.
Ouch. Okay, so quick disclaimer. The three of us are not historians, nor are we experts on this subject. We are just sharing stories about the information we find. So if we get our facts a little mixed up, please forgive us and send us a comment, and we will all continue learning.
So last week, I began telling you guys about Lena Bobardi, but I just wanted to share a lot of information and decided to split it up into 2 episodes.
Yes. So, listeners, if you haven't heard episode 37 yet, pause this episode and go listen to that one so you can learn about Lena's formative years and everything that influenced what we are going to talk about today.
We should also maybe do a quick recap.
That's a good idea. Okay, well, last week on Shibo's podcast, Lena was born in Rome in 1914. Her father was an engineer and a painter and taught her from an early age about analytical thinking and drawing. She graduated in 1939 from the College of Architecture at Università La Sapienza di Roma and left to begin her architectural career in Milan.
Yes. So after that, she worked for famous sexist architect Gio Ponti, who didn't pay her much.
So because of that, Lena worked on her side hustles. She worked for Domus Magazine and as a journalist for other big newspapers. At 28 years old, she and her buddy Carlo Pagani started the firm Studio Pagani Bull. But World War II was going on and it was hard for them to get work. So Lena focused more on working as a journalist by creating her own magazine called A with Bruno Zevi. And at the same time, between 1944 and 1945, she continued her work for Domus Magazine as the deputy director. And then through all these different creative outlets, she was able to test and grow her theories on architecture.
Around that same time, Assis Chateaubriand, who some call the Citizen Kane of Brazil, asked Pietro to start a museum there and for Lena to design it. Lena and Pietro said yes. The museum would be called the Sao Paulo Museum of Art, or MASP, and its first home was a few floors at the headquarters of the newspaper Diarios Asociados, which Assis owned while they searched for a site to build the new museum.
Lena missed the magazine life, and in 1948, she started Habitat, a review for architecture and art in Brazil. Through Habitat, she continued to expand her architecture theories and to study architecture, art, design, and culture concepts in Brazil. And there was nothing else quite like it at the time, focused on architecture and intertwining all forms of art design, including things you wouldn't necessarily think of, like dance and fashion. Lena was breaking new ground.
Yes. So even though Lena had a lot of fires burning and the design for the MASP was still going on, nothing had actually gotten built until 1951 when she completed her own home, the Glass House. It was a space where she tested ideas regarding spatial experience, private versus public, materiality, integration of the built environment with nature, stuff like that.
Yes, and that was a very important project for her. It brought Lena more exposure and more work. And now we're all caught up, and I'm ready to hear about what she did next.
Bacana! Let's continue. So, like many of the ladies we've talked about thus far, Lena was involved in academia. She taught architecture theory at the University of Sao Paulo from 1955 to 1957. Quite fitting for the season.
Same.
Then, like professors do, she applied for tenure. To do this, she submitted an essay that was later turned into her theory book. It was called Propedeutic Contribution to the Teaching of Architecture Theory.
That is a mouthful, if I've ever heard one. Did you even know what propedeutic meant before you saw that title?
Heck no! I had to look that shit up! And now I know what it means. It means serving as a preliminary instruction or as an introduction to further study. So there you go. Lena teaching us some SAT words.
Obrigada.
So yeah, this theory book is interesting because it's very critical of theory itself in general, or more so what was theory and how it was taught. She disapproved of teaching a theory of styles or of theory versus practice. To her, theory and practice were one, and she was critical of functionalism and the modern movement. She argued more for a romantic way of thinking. She explained modernists like to put everything in a box, while romantics thought about architecture in a cosmic sense. I think this means that she thought about things more holistically in a way.
Cosmic is such an interesting word choice.
I mean, I can understand what she means in that sense that, yeah, Najdi, she was probably thinking about it holistically. In the cosmic sense, in quotation marks, I think she means when you think about, like, the user in the space, how they utilize it, the impacts of the surrounding areas, and how that can affect the design of the space. I think good design, I will claim, that is when all of those things can work in a delightful, synergistic way.
Yeah. To that point, she opposed her colleague Bruno Sevi's thoughts on interior space. As described by historian Vanessa Grossman, Lena argued for the term total space, one that participates in human life and humans as actors in the space of the world.
I totally agree with that. I think that sometimes architects we want to control users' movements, but I think that architecture really functions best when it leaves opportunities for the user to make changes or use the space how they want to. And so a space that is multifunctional, so to speak, versus just functional. I think I agree with Lena about modernism. I often found that the designs were very rigid and not necessarily functional. I know that the whole thing was form follows function, and I like that as a theoretical term. But to me, the modernist movement and functionalism, I don't know, they weren't the same things. I mean, there are definitely examples of it working. Like I would say the Schroeder House that we talked about in season two comes to mind. But I can also think of a lot of examples where the houses weren't functional.
Well, back to Lena. Unfortunately, it was an uphill battle for her to get tenure. And she had a couple of things against her, really. Her gender, her nationality, and some faculty found her difficult, which I really don't know if that translates to she's a woman. But anyway. Still, Lena went for it, and you gotta love her for that. Unsurprisingly, she did not get tenure. So she left.
Boo.
Did they not know who she was? Que tristeza.
Hello.
Seriously, their loss. A year later, she designed a house for her friend and neighbor, Valeria Cirel. Listeners, please check out our show notes to look at this house. When you first see it, it's kind of ugly. But if you study it and try to understand what Lena was trying to do, you will look at it in a different light. I won't force an auditory tour of this one like I did last week. So I'll let you discover it on your own. So look at pictures.
Now I'm intrigued to see if I think it's ugly and then if I change my mind.
Yeah, me too. I have to check this out.
Okay, so we'll talk about it on the recap.
Sure. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I got to do my homework now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if it's ugly, I got to check it out.
Only it's like because it's ugly.
Yeah, because it's like a train wreck, you know? Like, I only want to see the bad and the good and the bad. Nothing in between.
This season, like, we're checking out ugly houses, architecture's antisocial. Like,
it's a lot happening.
Season four, what's up?
Well, moving on. In 1958, she was invited to found and direct the Modern Art Museum in Salvador de Bahia. That's about 28 hours in a car today. So I can't imagine back then. Needless to say, she moved there. The commute was not worth it.
Dang. Yeah, that is not a sustainable commute. I sometimes forget how freaking huge Brazil is. It actually reminds me of when Nerjiti and I were in Buenos Aires and we thought that we could road trip to Iguazu Falls at the Brazilian border. It's 16 hours, y'all. It did not make the itinerary.
No.
Hi, Nerjiti, wishful thinking. But also, this reminds me of season one lady, Julian Morgan, what she didn't do. Remember? Julia commuted to go to her, like, before Tiger King house that she was building.
Crazy.
And Lena was like, nah, I'm just going to live here. She, yeah, that's not, so true. Not about that commute life.
That's the right move. Sorry. Sing it, girl. Sing it.
Players, they gon' play. And Lena, she's gon' teach. She taught the theory and philosophy of architecture at the Federal University of Bahia.
Oh, man. Can you imagine having her as a professor?
Super intense. But you would learn a lot also.
For real. In my research, I came across what she wrote as an intro to the course. Actually, let me share my favorite quote from that. We do not understand history as a crystallization of history. History from the manuals or the mouths of the professors, but history in the now. The history of the labor and toil of the people.
The word crystallization makes me think that she's saying history is not set in stone. and constantly changing.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are levels to this. Yes.
Tell us.
So many. The cosmos. Okay. So
break it down.
Break it down.
Preach.
Okay. So yes, to what you're saying, Lizzie. And then in the second part of history is in the now. So in order to see what is happening today, we are acknowledging and witnessing the consequences of the history that we are making. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That is trippy. It's trippy.
It's trippy. Yeah. And I think that's why she wanted to leave Rome, honestly, because it was a lot of ruins and antiquity. And while she was very much appreciative of all of that, there was much more to history out there in the world that she wanted to learn from.
Ooh, Nargidi, that's such a good point. Milan was very much in the now versus Rome, which was in the past. And you know what? From our time in Florence, I remember I really liked Milan because it was just so very like cosmopolitan compared to the other cities, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, Ballas, they gon' ball. And Lena's gonna write.
Album coming out, season 10.
Nargidi's about to drop her single,
right?
Lena's gonna do what Lena's gonna do. Don't make me pee. She started a weekly page in the newspaper Diario Noticias en Salvador, where she highlighted local art and artists.
If there's one thing that Lena's going to do, she's gonna write.
Was she still writing for her own magazine as well, though?
Well, it existed, but she wasn't as involved because it was 28 hours away in Sao Paulo. And she was not about the Julia Morgan life, you know?
I suppose that's a fair reason.
You think? Her time in Salvador came to an end in 1964 because of the military coup. She went back to Sao Paulo. When asked about this crazy political time in her life, she said, and I quote, "I've suffered persecution here in Brazil, but I've never been in prison because I'm like an insect. When I want to, I hide underground. I know how to disappear. I'm a past master at such things."
Oh, okay, Lena. She's scrappy.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would go with the insect analogy, but I like the idea of like, you think you got her, but she'll come back like a bug.
Like you can't kill her like a cockroach?
I mean, yes, but I decided not to use those words, but you said it, so it's out there.
Fast forward to 1968 and like 20 years since I started talking about it. But the Sao Paulo Museum of Art, or MAS, finally finished construction. So, yay!
Yeah! Parabéns.
Muito bem.
Jessica, how about you tell us more about this project since you studied it with me?
All right, let's get into it. Okay, so this museum was like nothing the world had ever seen before.
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's start with the facade. It was all glass. Direct sunlight is not the best for a lot of works of art. I mean, think about it. Have you ever seen a museum with windows inside the actual exhibition space? The Mona Lisa next to a window? Nope. But this also goes to show how Lena revolutionized the standard museum typology.
Oje belgi.
So, Lena ends up placing the works of art from off of the walls and places them inside glass frames in the middle of the space in the museum where people could walk in front, behind, all around the pieces. Totally different from a traditional museum where the interaction of the people and the art also became the art.
I get goosebumps just imagining this. I wish I could have been there. I love how she totally represented her ideas about bringing art to the masses through the design of the space.
That's so interesting. Is the art still displayed that way today?
I believe so. They stopped doing it for a while, but I think in the early 2000s, they brought it back. And I think it's still like that today.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. So we have to talk about the construction of it. because that was also totally innovative. This glass humongous box that is about 230 feet long, 90 feet wide, and 46 feet tall.
Or for everyone outside of the U.S., Liberia, and Myanmar, 70 meters long by 29 meters wide by 14 meters high.
Yes, this beautiful monster of a building is elevated from the ground plane by these four concrete pillars, 26 feet or 8 meters high, and those four pillars are connected by two crazy big precast concrete beams, and those support the box with cables, which means this whole thing has zero columns in the inside.
This idea of opening up the space and large spans without columns was something that modern architects worked hard to achieve, right? I mean, the first example that comes to mind is Mies at Crown Hall in IIT, where he suspended the roof with metal beams and eliminated the need for an interior column.
Yeah, he does the same thing at the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston. But the difference between those buildings and MASP is that their structure was metal. And Lena used concrete. She was using concrete in tension instead of compression, which is a little wild, don't you think?
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this site, because this site was donated from a private citizen to the city of Sao Paulo with the condition that no building would ever get built that blocked the view of the city from the Trianon Park.
Gotta love those restrictive covenants.
Yep. Lena's genius solution was to create two parts, one that was embedded in vegetation and gardens, and the other that was raised to allow for that continuous view. This view of the city and the park connects both spaces, creating this exterior versus interior ping pong that she likes to play with, you know.
Yes, yes, and yes. Are you noticing a theme here between her house and this building?
Heck yeah. It's all about duality with Lena and how two things meet. I think with her, site context must be like critical, super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm feeling a connection between these projects.
Okay, so by raising the building to allow for the continuous views, she created a central plaza underneath the building that she called the Agora. Public communal area for all. Wink, wink, tee, hee, hee, hee. You know what we talking about? Agora.
But seriously, doesn't this remind you of her theory talk? Like architecture as a whole of spaces coming together and the cosmos of it all.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And actually, that space is still used today in all sorts of ways. Exhibitions, festivals, concerts. If you can dream it, you could do it in there.
OMG, this is everything architecture should be about. I want to marry this building and have lots of babies with it.
Ooh. You and this building are in tension. Concrete tension.
No. Talk about some compression.
Hey. That's a joke Nerd Jenny would have made, so you know I had to throw it in there.
I love the song too.
Yeah, I mean,
for the next 10 years after MASP was completed, Lena worked on a lot of set designs for theater and films. One of her most famous works in this realm was the Teatro Oficina, where she rethought the theater concept. Here, the stage was designed as more of a catwalk, and on the same plane, the audience would sit or stand on either side of it, reimagining the interaction between spectator and presenter, and in a way, making the audience a part of the show. There was also kind of like scaffolds on the sides that created more levels for people to enjoy the show, but still, just the way it was designed was meant to make the audience a part of the theater experience.
This goes back to Lena's use of duality in design. In this example, she uses different ways to experience art, the spectator as the art, and also making art more accessible to the public by lowering art from its pedestals and putting the spectator and the art in the same field. Bellissimo.
Well, from the late 1970s, early 1990s, she was back at it doing a lot of everything. She worked on exhibitions, international competitions, designed churches, another museum, a city hall, traveled to Morocco and Japan. She kept it busy.
Oh. Okay. These projects sound so cool. I am very curious to know how these churches look like.
Yeah. After that, Lina worked on a lot of projects in Salvador de Bahia again. In 1991, she received the Latin American Prize in the 4th Buenos Aires Architecture Biennial. And a year later, on March 20, 1992, Lina passed away from a lung embolism. She was 77 years old.
Mm. Oh no, that was so sudden for me. But also, she did so much. I mean, we spent 2 episodes talking about her and her work.
Yeah, she did so much. And part of me thinks that there was still more to learn about her. She was just so good.
Yes, absolutely. I love the way Lina thought about and practiced architecture. Her theory about architecture participating in life and us participating as actors in space and how that translated to her buildings. I'm just in love.
Mm. Yeah, I do love that. And I completely agree with her. I think we should always be considering how people will use a space, but also leaving space for them to, quote unquote, design the space through their actions.
Right. In recent times, Lina has been the subject of a lot of expositions in a lot of museums. Countless articles have been written about her work. So many YouTube videos. Actually, I encourage you all to do a deep dive, because even though this was probably the most thorough episodes I have ever done, it was like 5% of everything there is to talk about and learn about Lina Bobardi. She even has a Google Doodle.
Yeah, I do remember when I saw that, and I just remember thinking, yeah, let these non-architects know about some Lina. Energy, I think you did a great job trying to condense this episode or episodes as much as you could, because, I mean, this is our first 2-parter to talk about the life of Lina Bobardi.
Thank you.
Yes, you did a great job, Griffin.
Well, I want to give a shout out to the host of a podcast and YouTube show called Arc y Filosofía. It's a show about architecture theory hosted by 3 dudes. 2 of them are professors. They have an episode on Lina, which I found really good. And the host, Viviano, said he wanted to make that episode because he is sad and shocked that when he asks his student for their architecture icons, the only woman they ever mention is Zaha Hadid.
Hmm.
Mm-mm. Yes, this is why we have this show. I love that they're also trying to fill that void.
Yes, so good job. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Now, it's time for a caryatid. That's your cue, Lizzie.
A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we present a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode.
All right, let's do it. Drum roll, please. Dr. Harriet Harris!
Yeah!
Harriet! Yeah! I hope that the listeners appreciated the samba in there.
We tried.
Dr. Harriet Harris is the Dean of the School of Architecture at the Pratt Institute and advocate for equality in architecture, just like Lina was. And this is also a listener-suggested caryatid, so we want to thank Michelle Gorman for the suggestion.
Yeah. Awesome.
Harriet is from the UK. In 2001, she graduated first in her class in architecture school. Harriet was also a hustler. She did all sorts of jobs. She volunteered. She was the editor of her college magazine. She did competitions. Oh, good story. There was a concrete design competition and everyone was doing buildings. And Harriet was like, how is this innovation? So she and her partner, Susie Winstanley, designed a concrete wedding dress and won.
A concrete wedding dress.
Whoa, that sounds so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely innovated. She started the firm Design Heroin Architecture with her buddy Susie, where they focus on democratizing architecture. In the words of Harriet, we need an architecture for the 99%. Architecture today needs to see itself as responsible for and relevant to addressing the world's problems, climate crisis, social justice, inclusivity and diversity, and so on. All these problems are inherently at the heart of what architecture should be focusing on, and that's how we're reconvening the school's agenda.
Say it one time for the one time. Tell Harriet.
I love it.
I love it. I can definitely see the connection with Lena and how she advocated for all society and how they related to architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, it's time to say ciao. Before we sign off, we want to say obrigada to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical producer, and most of all, muito obrigada for listening. We hope you enjoyed learning about Lena and Harriet along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies. Again, obrigada.
So, did you know that She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network? Now, Gable Media is a curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, your family members, your roommates, your professors, your classmates. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about women bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on Twitter at shebuildspod. Até mais.
Até mais.
Até mais.
Ciao. So, listeners, for some insider secrets, we had to do some brainstorming on this one when Narjiti proposed this be a two-parter.
Yeah, we definitely had to do some restructuring for the whole season to see how it would turn out.
Yeah.
But I think it was all good.
Yep.
Yay! Thank you, ladies. I'm so happy that you said yes to me.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.